You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, it was great to hear Bill Maher using paraphrasing the clips that we were playing of Franklin Roosevelt calling out Republicans. In fact, why don't you pull those up there, Sean, or Shano, excuse me. Pulling up there, paraphrasing the big lie that, well, that Franklin Roosevelt was accusing the Republicans of using back in 1944. This was the election of 44. In the election of 48, Harry Truman essentially did the same thing. He called it the do-nothing Congress. They overrode his veto of Taft-Hartley. He introduced national health care, single-payer health care legislation in 1947. Republicans shot it down. A lot of efforts to do good legislation. And so it's just great. We've been pounding this thing on this program for a week and a half to hear Bill Maher pick up this clip from Franklin Roosevelt in 1944 as he is identifying the Republican strategy to try to win the election, which I would say is the same strategy they're trying right now. Here's Franklin Roosevelt, just 30 seconds.
Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf.
Written
by Hitler himself. The technique was all set out in Hitler's book, and it was copied by the aggressors of Italy and Japan. According to that technique, you should never use a small falsehood. Always a big one. For its very fantastic nature would make it more credible. If only you keep repeating it over and over and over again.
There you go. Only if you keep repeating it over and over and over again. On the line with us, the general president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, James Hoff at Teamster.org. President Hoff, welcome back to the program.
Well, Tom, it's good to be back on the program.
It seems to me like this big lie strategy that the Republicans have employed. We've identified five or six or seven of them just in Paul Ryan's speech, and you know, Mitt Romney's going on with them. One of the big lies that these guys have been pushing since 1947 is somehow that if organized labor is destroyed, that America will become a paradise, and instead it's become a nightmare for the American middle class.
Well, that's just something that we're seeing now. We saw it in 47. But more than anything else, we're starting to see it in 2010, which is really the advent of the Tea Party and their attack. And we first saw it, you know, vilifying teachers in New Jersey and Ohio and Wisconsin and public employees, that they shouldn't have pensions, they shouldn't have decent wages. And it was all basically a program to basically make people change the opinion about unions, especially public employee unions. Then they went after teachers. And there's no end to this. This is part of the big lie theory. They're not the reason why there's deficits. It's because of bad financial management, not getting enough revenue from corporations. And that's the real problem, and not vilifying unions. So this is basically something, you know, I don't go back to 47, but I do realize that from 2010, this is a whole new attack that has been running wild. And we saw it at the Republican convention. We saw Chris Christie pounding his chest about how he took on the teachers. And we see this, we saw it in the same thing in Ohio, the same thing, you know, in Wisconsin. So it's kind of the big lie theory, and, you know, basically there was no big deficit in Wisconsin, but he used that as a pretense to go after teachers and go after public employees.
Well, he created one by giving a he gave a multi-$100 million tax cut to the millionaires and billionaires in his state, and thus created a deficit
that's another thing. They always leave that out. I'm from Michigan. They did the same thing in Michigan. They say, you've got problems. The first thing they do is to give a tax cut to the corporations, and the same thing in Ohio. And it's the same thing in Wisconsin. This is like a playbook they have.
Yeah.
And then they say, my God, look at the deficit. The teachers must have done that.
President Hoff, one of the questions that the Republicans have been hammering, and then, you know, they keep going, they're trying to evoke Jimmy Carter. But the question that they keep asking is, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? I have a detailed list of answers to that question. And I think you and I both know what, you know, 4 years ago, we were hemorrhaging jobs and talking about a new Great Depression and, Hank Paulson was trembling and begging for money for TARP because everything was about to collapse. But isn't the real question that we should be talking about and the Democrats need to be talking about, frankly, are you better off than you were 30 years ago or 32 years ago when Reaganomics and Reagan's hostility to working people, which was kicked off with his busting Patco in 81, are you better off than you were 30 years ago when this 30-year experiment of Reaganomics was started?
Well, I remember that in with Reagan. You know, you remember the Laffer curve and all that?
Oh, yeah.
When they basically said, if we get tax cuts for the rich people, it's going to trickle down to the poor people.
Right.
Now, I don't know of any poor people that want to wait for the trickle down, but that's where they started all this. But coming up even closer, if you go back even to the era of the Bush recession in 08, the Lehman moment and all the things, TARP, people seem to have had forgotten that there's a collective amnesia that we started with this economy in a complete tank in 08. And, you know, from that, we're doing much better today. We still have a lot of people unemployed. But look at the auto industry. Michigan and Ohio have less unemployment than the national average. People are back to work. Ask the hundreds of thousands of auto workers that are back to work if things are better for them. Ask the Teamster car hauler that has a job today and hauling more cars in a record year if his jobs are better off. So things are better, but they're marginally better. We really can't be satisfied. We've got to do a lot better than what we're doing right now. But you, to answer that question is things are better, but they've got to get a lot better.
Yeah. And wasn't it ironic to see at the RNC, John Kasich in Ohio, Scott Walker in Wisconsin, Rick Snyder, I don't recall if he had a speaking role in Michigan, but you know it would have been the same speech, all talking about how their economies are better, and taking credit for it as if Republicans had something to do with it when it was really President Obama defined Mitt Romney's let Detroit go bankrupt theory and instead rescuing the U.S. auto industry.
I know. It's really incredible. I mean, Rick Snyder, how he could take credit. He would have been against, you know, bailing out the auto industry because they're all Republicans. Mm-hmm. You know, and much to his credit, President Obama had the courage to do it against a lot of advice. It was a right move, and he did save thousands and thousands of jobs and really saved a major manufacturing center in the United States. Of, you know, Ford didn't go in, but Chrysler and General Motors were in bankruptcy. And basically, if he wouldn't have done this, I think Ford would have been in trouble. Think of all the suppliers. Think of the hundreds of thousands of people that are connected to the auto industry that are working today that would not have been if that had been let to go. So that's a major thing. And no matter what Mitt Romney said, he can't get away from that editorial he wrote in the New York Times, let Detroit go bankrupt.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's never going to, how he comes back to Michigan, and he still says it. And I said, boy, this guy is just tone deaf.
Yeah. Well, now he's trying to say that that Obama actually followed his advice. And it's like, what? What?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it genuinely is. We're talking with the general president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, James Hoffa. We have just about a half a minute left, Mr. Hoffa. Your suggestion to the Democrats for what they should be doing this week?
Well, I think, number one, they've got to do what the Republicans didn't do. The Republicans had probably the most dishonest convention I've ever seen. There were platitudes, talks about their fathers, about their family life, about the forefathers, but there was nothing about what they intend to do with the economy, which is what everybody wants to know. And I think, they didn't talk about they want tax cuts for the rich, they want to get rid of the capital gains tax. They basically want to cut entitlements. They want to go after Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. You didn't hear a thing about that.
Right.
You never heard the word voucher.
Yeah.
So they basically glossed that over. I think that Obama and his team have to come out and really put out a good picture of what they're doing. And he's been doing that. He's very straightforward about where he wants to go with his
economy. I'm absolutely with you and totally agree. James Hoffa, thanks so much for being with us today.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And we'll be back with more from Charlotte from the Democratic National Convention. I'm live in Washington, D.C. in just a moment. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Amazing. Ryan Romney robocalls attacking Obama for changing Medicare forever. You get this? This is quite amazing. I don't know if I can play this on my computer for you or not, Shane. Let me try. Okay.
Romney for president.
Some think Obamacare is the same as free health care, but nothing is free. Obama is raiding $716 billion from Medicare, changing the program forever, taxing wheelchairs and pacemakers, raising taxes on families making less than $120,000. Free health care comes at a very high price. The Romney-Ryan plan will restore Medicare funding and protect and strengthen the program for the next generation.
This call was paid for by Romney for President, Inc. at 857-293-0899.
Pretty amazing. No, I would have left the phone number on there. It is pretty amazing. This is a robocall from the Romney Ryan campaign filled with lies. They're not doing their lies out loud anymore. For example, the welfare to work that Obama did away with, welfare to work, that lie was missing from several of Romney and Ryan's recent speeches. Apparently, they've decided that lie has run its course, but they're continuing the lie that President Obama pulled money out of Medicare. He did not. What he did was he took money out of Medicare Advantage, which is the corporate division of Medicare run by mostly AARP and United Healthcare. And they are the big losers. They're the ones who are going to lose $700 billion. And he negotiated rates with hospitals and negotiated them down, said, we're going to just directly engage you rather than going through these health insurance companies. We will directly engage you. What price will you give us? And the hospital said, okay, you're going to send us a lot of extra clients. We'll give you a lower price or a lot of, you know, you're going to make sure that we get this business. We'll give you a decent price. So Obama saved the money. Romney's saying he did away with the money. Romney's lying about Obama's role on Medicare. And now this robocall extends that lie and says taxing wheelchairs and pacemakers, raising taxes on families making less than $120,000. These are just plain old flat out lies. It is really quite remarkable. And Franklin Roosevelt was so right. The big lie strategy. Tell the biggest lie possible and repeat it over and over and over in every venue you can. Now they're using robocalls to do it. And by the way, that audio clip came from the Center for American Progress. They exclusively have it. It's over at thinkprogress.org. Credit where credit's due. And also from the thinkprogress.org blog, they did a great job. They do great jobs of pulling some of the stuff together. Jed Legum, Zach Bocamp pulled this thing together. Here are some, you know, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Well, here are some headlines from newspapers from 4 years ago. From pretty much, about now, from mid-September. Shockwave felt around the world. Gets nasty as Lehman tanks, Merrill vanishes, AIG wobbles. That was the New York Daily News. Here's one from the Albuquerque Journal. Depression coming? Boil some beans. Ladies who quilt give tips on surviving tough times. Here's another one. This is in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. One day on the brink on Wednesday, it seemed U.S. economy might collapse. This is from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Great Depression closer than U.S. admits, report finds. From Politico, will Bush become the new Hoover? I would say he has become. That's why his name was absent from the RNC. Colorado Springs Gazette, developers bend under housing meltdown. Florida News Press, depression seemed impossible. CNN, Wall Street meltdown continues. NPR, is it really the next Great Depression? The New York Times, behind closed doors, warnings of calamity. Yes, 4 years ago today, our housing bubble had popped about 6 months earlier. People were beginning to see their mortgages just evaporate, their housing value evaporate, and the stock market was on the verge of tanking. The stock market, you'll recall, went down to 6,000 under Bush. It's at 13,000 now. We were hemorrhaging 700,000 jobs a month under Bush when Obama took over. We have now had 7 months, straight months of private sector job creation. Now, there have been some 500,000 to 700,000 people in the public sector, government workers, who've been laid off, a few federal, mostly in Republican states, because they're doing this. They got to do this to try and keep the unemployment number above 8%. So to get it above 8%, well, okay, we got to lay off some more people, and then we got to lay off some more people. We need to lay off a few more people. Lay off some people in Ohio. Lay off some people in Michigan. Lay off some people in Florida. Get rid of some government workers. You know, all government workers, right? And you can keep that unemployment rate up there. So it's just incredible. And then Romney comes along. Somebody says, this is hysterical. Laura Ingraham, right-wing talk show hostess, whatever. Laura Ingraham, she says, you've noted there are signs of improvement on the horizon. How do you answer the president's argument that the economy is getting better? Romney, well, of course it's getting better. The economy always gets better after recession. There's always a recovery. Romney, off message. Ingraham, trying to get him back on message. Isn't it a hard argument to make? If you're saying, like, okay, he inherited this recession, he took a bunch of steps to try and turn the economy around, and now we're seeing more jobs but vote against him anyway, isn't that a hard argument to make? Is that a stark enough contrast? Romney, have you got a better one, Laura? It just happens to be the truth. Say what? Mitt Romney, in a rare moment of candor, actually telling the truth. Things are better now than they were 4 years ago. Come on, Democrats, turn that into a TV ad, quick. You know, they got some governor from some state on Meet the Press on Sunday, and they said, you know, are things better than they were 4 years ago? And he says, no, I don't think so, but we got to work on it, or words to that effect. The Republicans immediately turned it into a TV ad. They were all over it. You know, oh, Democrats, those things aren't better. Romney, though?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Romney says things are better than 4 years ago? Very interesting. We'll be back 28 minutes past the hour. Thank you for that music, Shane. Finally popped up in my ear. Welcome back. Here we are. Tom Hartman here with you live from Washington, D.C. And we don't have any Charlotte guests. Okay, that is absolutely fine because we've got a lot of folks who want to call in. Paul in Denison, Texas. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I hope both you and Louise are both getting well post-haste.
Thank you. We are doing our very best.
I had just a couple of comments for you today. The biggest one is the one topic you brought up today, the Mein Kampf big lie strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Citizens United had nothing to do with inhibiting anyone's speech. That speech was already protected by the First Amendment. What Citizens United really did was allow the unrestricted and clandestine amplification of that speech, and I don't think that point's been made enough.
Right.
I mean, basically, they're drowning out the message through every outlet available to their message and not allowing a progressive point of view to be put forth.
Yeah, or drowning out the progressive point of view. Yes, I agree with you. And,
okay.
And you know, with this concept, this weird doctrine that money is somehow speech, well, money will buy the megaphone, which will make one person's speech much louder than another. And that's what they're doing, and that's what it has done. So, you know, very well said. Thank you, Paul.
Comment that I had for you was based on reading your book, Cracking the Code, which I absolutely love, and I love your ADHD books because I'm also afflicted by that.
Welcome to the tribe.
You know, thank you. I've used that tool and come up with an analogy that I've had a lot of luck with explaining to conservatives the quagmire that we're in right now with our economy. And basically, what I do is I'll say, imagine we're playing the game of Monopoly, which is a good example of capitalism in action.
Mm-hmm.
And what basically the progressives are trying to do is ensure that the game never comes to an end.
Right.
We're making sure that the game is constantly being played. And what conservatives are doing is they're trying to bring us closer and closer to the end of the game where you have one winner who owns everything.
Right. You're absolutely right. Only instead of one winner, it's maybe a few thousand. But that's what it boils down to. That's what they're all about. It's autocracy. It's awful. Paul, thanks a lot for listening on iTunes. Stephen, listening on 88.5 down in Tampa, Florida, in Gainesville, Florida. Hey, Stephen, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Before I get to my what I called about the story that you did in your news segment about how the judges overturned the voter ID thing, something I don't think people talk about is one of the judges that overturned that was a conservative judge that was put in place by George W. Bush.
That's right.
But anyway, what I call it about is what I love about politics is like the strategy that comes behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally think that in 2008, as well as right now, and I think it's evident by the comedy Ryan ticket, that the Republicans really want to lose. I don't think that they want to win, because I personally believe that if they won, that their idea of trickle-down economics would just completely fall on its face and there would be nowhere to hide. See, in 2008, I think they hid and ran by President Obama winning. But the question I have for you is, while I think this election is very important, I think that something that's getting really overlooked, and it does every 4 years, is Congress and the Senate.
Mm.
Let's say that in the best case scenario that Obama wins. Like, what's going to stop us from having to deal with the same opposition? I mean, in the beginning,
Mitch McConnell has come out and said now that if the Republicans don't win the Senate, if the Democrats hold the Senate, that Obama and President Obama gets a second term, that they're not going to start magically cooperating with him. So what I think they have to do is the Democrats would have to do, first of all, they'd have to take control of the House of Representatives, which is going to be a heavy lift, but I don't think it's going to be impossible. A lot of those Tea Party guys that got elected with great hopes and all this kind of stuff have turned out to be sellouts. They've operated contrary to their voters' best interests. All of them have voted to voucherize Medicare, things like that. So I think it's possible.
You're leaving something out. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're leaving something out. You also have other Tea Partiers like this guy Toho that's in my district that just beat out Cliff Stearns that are going to split the vote in the primary. So I personally think that the Democrats can win the House.
Yeah.
However,
so
even if they don't, and I'm so sorry, but I know I got a short amount of time. But if let's say that we do beat them out and they still keep enough seats for a filibuster or whatever, the thing that I'm concerned about is when Obama first got elected, Obama catches a lot of flack, including from me, about really trying to meet in the middle here.
Right.
And then finally he said, look, this isn't working anymore. I'm just going to ram this, but and that's kind of where we're at right now when it comes to the House and the Senate. But what can we do now? Because even if we win the majority there, we're not going to win 61. I mean, let's be honest here. There's no way we're going to do that. So they're still going to have the ability to be there kind of as obstructionists. I mean, do you see any kind of real legislation going to be able to get passed?
There is a way around it. The problem is that you've got to get bills out of the House of Representatives. And that's where I say, if the Democrats can take the House and hold the Senate, then what they can do is the strategy that Grover Norquist laid out in the Financial Times for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said the Republicans are going to start doing if they take the Senate is they will introduce bills via the process of budget reconciliation. Now, this is a weird, arcane little thing, but here's how it works. If all legislation is supposed to originate in the House and then it goes to the Senate, and in the Senate, certain kinds of legislation, most kinds of legislation, laws, post office renamings, judgeships, whatever it may be, in the Senate are all subject to the filibuster. And so it takes 61 votes to get things passed because you got to obstruct, you got to break the filibuster. But there's a certain type of legislation that cannot be filibustered, and that's legislation that has to do with budgets. So if you throw things into what you call a budget bill, it can be passed with 51 votes in the Senate through a process called budget reconciliation. And what Grover Norquist said that the Republicans plan on doing if they take the Senate is they're going to take everything from anti-abortion legislation to anti-sex education legislation to teaching evolution in our schools legislation to gun legislation, you name it, and they will attach it to a piece of budget legislation and call it a budget bill so it will get passed by reconciliation. This is how Obamacare got passed, by the way. So reconciliation. Now here's one hook. If something's passed by budget reconciliation, it cannot last more than 10 years. It expires at the end of 10 years. So Obamacare was passed by budget reconciliation. It will expire in 10 years. The Bush tax cuts were passed by budget reconciliation, 51 votes. That's why they expired 2 years ago. So if the Democrats are smart and they can control and they can take the House, then what they will do is all of that, those 300 plus brilliant pieces of legislation that Nancy Pelosi got out of the House that had things like, you know, if you ship jobs overseas, we're no longer going to give you tax breaks. But if you bring them back home, we'll give you a whole brand new set of tax breaks, things like that. That the Republicans filibustered in the House because they weren't called budget bills. They were called standalone laws or regulations or rule changes. Mm-hmm. All the Democrats have to do is start rolling everything into budget bills and calling them reconciliation. And
so
there you go.
I'm sorry. So
it's dirty pool.
River Norquist to thank for us being able to do that.
Because
we can say, look, the Republicans are going to do it. But hey, thanks, Grover, for, you know, making it okay for everyone to do it.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I would do, and I would quote Grover Norquist every time I do it. Yep, absolutely. Thanks a lot for the call, Stephen. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Step by step, right? Nick in San Diego, California. Hey, Nick, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to Sirius.
Hi there. You mentioned some Franklin Roosevelt clips earlier, and there's one which I've heard you play only once in a blue moon every now and then that I think is actually in some ways even more relevant to what's going on than what the Republicans are doing now. And the gist of it was Roosevelt saying that, well, you know, the Republicans were opposed to Social Security, the Republicans were opposed to Medicare, and so on and so forth, on down this long list. And then he says, and now they say, but put us in charge of it because we can do it better.
Yeah, you've got that, don't you, Shano? It's the FDR on Social Security. Republicans, we can do it better. We've got the clip. I know we've got the clip.
Well, aside from just playing it, I'm wondering if you could post a link to it on your website or some other way.
If you go into YouTube, you can find it. They actually have the video there. And
I've tried and tried, and I can't find it. Maybe you can post a link, and that would make it a lot easier.
Yeah, I'm sure the folks in the chat room will find it. It'll be in our newsletter tonight, so we'll get that out, and it'll be on our website.
Great. Well, that's all I had.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call. Shane's still looking for it. You know, it's maybe we have the video. Maybe Jim's got it, actually, because we did play it as video, and it's this great video where FDR says, you know, the Republicans, they just say, you know, give it to us. We'll take care of it. We'll do it better. We'll do it differently. Well, yeah, quack, 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 quack. So anyway, we'll track that down over the next little bit and play it for you. Jeff in Fort Myers, Florida. Hey, Jeff, quick one.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Hey, it was great talking to you. I was just kind of wondering, you know, there's out here where I live, North Fort Myers, that you don't never hear about what they're doing in the Congress to stop all this bills and stuff from passing.
Right.
You don't never hear how they voted no to everything and how they're purposely running everything into the ground.
Right. Every time the Republicans blocked a vote, there should have been just this huge major press conference held in Washington, D.C., with the president and everybody else yelling about the do-nothing Congress. Instead, they just moved on to the next vote and tried to get something done. You're right, Jeff.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is where, in some ways, the Democrats have been a little soft on the message. On the other hand, a lot of them have been yelling about it, and the media pretty much just didn't pick it up. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk media for the sane among us. As requested, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 1936. This would have been the election of 1936. If you Google FDR, let me warn you, you will. You've got the audio there, Shane? Okay, well, why don't we play your version of it? It'll probably sound cleaner than the one I have. Here it is.
Let me warn you. And let me warn the nation against the smooth evasion that says, of course we believe these things. We believe in Social Security. We believe in work for the unemployed. We believe in saving homes. Cross our hearts and hope to die. We believe in all these things. But we do not like the way the present administration is doing them. Just turn them over to us. We will do all of them. We will do more of them. We will do them better. And most important of all, the doing of them will not cost anybody anything.
Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1936, quoting Mitt Romney. You know, the guy had a time machine. Or Paul Ryan. I mean, oh yeah, of course we love Medicare. We're gonna call it voucher care, but no, it'll be fine. And we love Social Security. We're gonna call it Wall Street, but everything will be fine. And anyway, Jim in Charleston, West Virginia. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
Buddy, I'll talk to you about propaganda.
Okay.
In West Virginia, coal is king.
Of course.
You know? And everybody about 5 years ago. The coal companies come out with this clean coal, clean coal, clean coal. If you say it often enough, people believe there's such a thing. There's no such thing as clean coal.
You're right.
If anybody wants to go down to the coal mine, everybody wants to take a chunk of coal and burn it, there's no such thing as clean coals. The EPA wants to put scrubbers on the stacks to keep that dirty, stinking coal dust from going out into the atmosphere. But they don't want to spend the money, just like the oil companies don't want to spend any money for safety valves down in the Gulf of Mexico. There's 20,000 oil wells down there. How many is enough?
Yeah.
I heard Ted Turner on one of his programs, he was sitting on the panel, he said, they've almost got me convinced there's such a thing.
Yeah.
I see right now on Sirius 128, Dale Earnhardt Jr. is advertising clean coal. Let's burn the clean coal in West Virginia.
That's sad.
Propaganda.
Yeah, it is. It's a flat out lie, but it's one that's been adopted by the industry. And again, they're doing what FDR said. You know, don't tell a small falsehood when you can tell a large one and repeat it over and over and over again. And by its very fantastic nature, people will believe it. You're absolutely right, Jim. Well said, Dave in Cleveland. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, how are you doing?
Fine,
you know
thanks.
What? It is the big lie, but it's now becoming the small ones, too. Their default position is lying. I mean, Ryan is lying about his marathon time, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, and then they caught Romney lying about his dog again. He said he only put him on the roof once, and then his wife said he put him on all the time. I mean, it's their default position.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's really quite remarkable. It really is. Thank you, Dave. Excellent point. Mary Lynn in Port Natchez, Texas? Hey,
Maryland in Port Natchez.
Port Natchez,
Texas. Yeah, good old Southeast Texas, down here in the refinery zones. Mm-hmm. Lots of good, hardworking union people down here in this little pocket of Texas. But I'm really curious about Paul Ryan's mom's story. How did she go from widowed, single mom to successful businesswoman? What's the story there?
His family had a fair amount of money, and when his dad died, he qualified for Social Security, but they had a fair amount of money. I don't know if it came from her family or his family, but he was never poor. And
okay.
So I'm guessing that
yeah.
You know, I don't know the details of it. I'd have to dig it out. I remember reading it once, but so that's it. She didn't suddenly get rich. They've had cash for a good long
okay.
time. He was an upper middle class.
Wondering.
Yeah. He. You know.
I was wondering if she qualified for Pell Grants or whatever.
No. I mean, they did take Social Security when his mother died when he was a teenager. But I don't think that they needed it. I don't think they were in desperate need of it. It was just simply that they qualified for it. Why turn it down? Sort of thing.
Exactly.
But let me qualify this by saying I am not a Paul Ryan biographer. I have read little bits and pieces of his biography here and there on the internet. They may or may not all be true, and what I'm saying may or may not be factual. So please don't please don't, you know, use it in an argument or something like that. We all should do a little more homework. I should do a little more homework, and I'll come back, and I'll try and let you know, okay? Okay, Marilyn?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Rick in San Francisco. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, I just want to say this is a great show you got going.
Thank you.
I wanted to point out, too, Romney said, I think a couple of times in that speech, he's going on about North American energy independence.
Right, which means we'll buy it from Canada and Mexico.
Oh, I was thinking we could just take them over. It'd be cheaper.
Actually, it'd be a hell of a lot more expensive. The Canadians and the Mexicans will fight us. They have done it before. They did it in the War of 1812. They did it in the Mexican-American War.
Well, the War of 1812 was just payback for 76.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, there's still apparently there's still a debate about who started that one, the War of 1812. Every time I bring it up, I get conflicting arguments. Just like every time I bring up the Civil War, I get all these emails and notes and people going, "Oh, wait a minute, no, it was the South that started. No, it was the North. No, it was the South. No,
yeah, well,
it was
a lot of people still hold the money from the Civil War.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call, Rick. It's an excellent point. And this is an example of language messaging. You know, it's like Paul Ryan this morning was on all the TV shows saying, well, you know, when I said that that plant that closed during the Bush administration closed, I didn't mean to suggest that it was Obama's fault. Well, of course he did. He's lied about that. Similarly, when Romney says we want to have a plan to make the United States energy independent with North American energy, meaning Canada and Mexico, he's not really lying.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, the right-wing libertarian variety meme, the thought virus that they've been putting out for some time now, back to, you know, when Jack Kennedy was president, it was the John Birch Society. It was Fred Koch. It was Daddy Koch was promoting this idea that America was built by the pioneer spirit, you know, by individuals doing and not by people working together. And that somehow if you pay people decent wages, you are demeaning them. And Jack Kennedy said it absolutely brilliantly. Let me just share this with you very, very quickly.
This argument that the government should stay out, that it saps our pioneer stock. I used to hear that argument when we were talking about raising the minimum wage to $1.25. I remember one day being asked to step out into the hall. And up the corridor came four distinguished-looking men with straw hats on and canes. They told me they had just flown in from a state in their private plane. And they wanted me to know that if we passed a bill providing for time and a half for service station attendants, who were then working about 55 to 60 hours at straight time, it would sap their self-reliance. The fact of the matter is, what saps anyone's self-reliance is working 60 hours at straight time, or working at 85 or 95 or $1 an hour. All depending upon filling out a pauper's oath and then getting it free. Nobody in this hall is asking for it for nothing.
And then he goes on. It's actually a speech about Social Security, but it's an amazing how he sets it up. Corey Elans is on the line. This former communications advisor to President Obama, member of Vox Global Policy Team, progressive strategist and commentator, at live in Charlotte at the Democratic National Convention. Corey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you. Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us. Is there a website for you?
There is. You can reach me at celons@voxglobal.com, and you can reach us at www.voxglobal.com.
Okay, voxglobal.com. Great.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. So tell me what's going on, what you're doing, what you're seeing.
Well, I'm here at the convention, very excited about the story that's going to be told this week. As you know, we're in the business this week of correcting the record compared to what was told last week, but also getting our supporters fired up about the fight ahead. We got just a little over 60 days left in this campaign, and now is the time to really strike the contrast between what an Obama presidency will look like for another 4 years versus what a Romney presidency would look like. One would take us forward. That would be President Obama. And Mr. Romney, unfortunately, would take us way back to times that we haven't seen in a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so true. It's back to the Ronald Reagan cut that audio tape during the Lyndon Johnson presidency,
right,
saying that Medicare was the opening the door to socialism, to Soviet-style socialism.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. That's
so
right.
So let's turn it into voucher care. Anything specific going on yet, Corey?
Well, as you know, tonight we're going to have the First Lady speaking, which is always well-received. The conversation that here in town this week has been about where she was 4 years ago this time, mm-hmm, when her numbers were not very good. People didn't know her very well. And quite frankly, the right had done a good job of vilifying her and painting her as a villain who should be, who we should be concerned about.
Well, Fox News and Drudge constantly were using images of her that characterized her as an angry black woman.
Exactly. And 4 years later, she's here. She's one of the most beloved figures in the country. Her approval ratings are through the roof. And she really will have a chance to tell the story of this president and the person that he has been through over the past 4 years, the challenges, trials, and triumphs that they've had as a family and we as a country because of the virtues of this presidency. And let me also say that, you know, really a big part of this week is, as I said before, contrasting what we saw last week at the Republican convention. It is startling to me, as we consider the issues of message and the importance of message, it's startling to me that Republicans and conservatives were dogged in how they approached real critical issues. You talked about Medicaid before and Medicare and how the right has continuously vilified that. Well, they continued to do that last week, and ultimately we know what the result of that will be if they come into power. President Obama will stand to protect it. They will work to fight it and defeat it. You also look at issues associated with the economy. I mean, we have to appreciate we're 750,000 jobs a month when we came into office in January 2009. We just lost 3 million jobs in the previous quarter under the Bush administration. Since that time, we've gained 3.5 to 4 million jobs have been created by this president during this administration. And that's, again, compared to the previous administration that created a net zero jobs over 8 years, not one job created.
Right.
So we are much better off than we were. The question of the week, are you better off? We as a nation are better off. We're moving in the right direction. And if we arrest this president's programs right now, we're simply going to go back in time.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we really want Bush, the third Bush administration?
Absolutely right.
Or the fourth Reagan administration.
I was going to say the fourth. Exactly right.
The fourth Reagan administration.
Exactly right. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, it really is. 30 years of this experiment called Reaganomics has been an utter and complete disaster for the American people, the American middle class, and it's time to say enough is enough. Corey, any other messages coming out of there you want to share with us?
Well, the primary thing that we want people all over the country to just be aware of are these tactics by the opposition towards voter suppression. It's a very serious issue. We've had some victories over the past several weeks with several new voting laws being overturned in Texas and several other states, and that's a good thing. Ultimately, the states, unfortunately, where those laws have been overturned have been states that fall under the Voting Rights Act that are subject to preclearance. So any rules that are made within a certain window of time have to be placed under review. And fortunately, the courts have said, you know what, you're not going to get away with that this time. Unfortunately, you do have states like Pennsylvania that are not subject to review, and their new laws requiring voter ID still stand. As a result, we have some 750,000 people in the state of Pennsylvania who do not have the proper identification to vote at this time.
Right.
And it's of real concern. So you have systemic efforts to suppress the vote, and then you have the standard efforts that happen every year with misinformation being given out, people being told the wrong polling places, people being given the wrong day on which to vote, all types of activities such as that. We have to be aware, we have to be awake, we have to be vigilant, and ultimately we have to make sure that everybody who is progressive and supports this president and supports the progress of our country, that they get out and vote on Election Day.
Yeah, Very well said. Corey Elans, the website voxglobal.com, is that right?
That's it.
Okay. Corey, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
I appreciate it. Let me see if I can find that. There's another piece in this clip where Kennedy's just ad-libbing about the pioneer spirit. I think this is it.
The national government. We pay 55% of all the research done. We help young men become doctors. We are concerned with the progress of this country. And those who say that what we are now talking about spoils our great pioneer heritage should remember that the West was settled with two great actions by the national government. One, in President Lincoln's administration, when he gave a homestead to everyone who went West, and in 1862 he set aside government property to build our land-grant colleges. This cooperation between an alert and progressive citizenry and a progressive government is what has made this country great, and we shall continue as long as we have the opportunity to do so.
Kicking their ass, Jack Kennedy. I get so excited when I hear that kind of stuff. And I hope to hear a whole bunch of it over this week coming out of the DNC. We'll see if their rhetoric stands up to the standards, the very high standards of FDR and JFK. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And more Jack Kennedy, and more and your calls coming up in just a few minutes. And more guests from Tampa, of course.
For every stoplight I didn't make, every chance I did or I didn't take, all the nights I went too far, all the girls that broke my heart, all the doors.
We're about 21 minutes past the hour. Talk media for the rest of us, the Tom Hartman Program, and. Eunice Kennedy Shriver actually founded the Save the Children program, and Mark Shriver is the Senior Vice President of the U.S. Programs for Save the Children. SaveTheChildren.org is the website. Mark Shriver, live from the DNC. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I just to correct you a little bit. My
Please
mom,
do.
Eunice Kennedy Shriver, started Special Olympics.
Oh,
that's okay. And I work for Save the Children, running their U.S. programs.
Okay.
No problem.
My apologies. My information here is wrong. But just as good. And your dad's legacy. Did your father, Sergeant Shriver, found the Peace Corps?
He created the Peace Corps.
That was my recollection.
Under President Kennedy, and then ran the war against poverty under President Johnson, where they created programs like Head Start, Legal Services for the Poor, VISTA, Foster mm-hmm. Grandparents.
And ran with George McGovern 40 years ago.
He ran 40 years ago this year for the vice president under George McGovern, and then 4 years later ran for president for a little bit of time. He lost, obviously, to Jimmy Carter in 1976.
Yeah. So you have seen it all, Mark. You've seen this whole process from a lot of different directions. And, you know, win and lose, up and down. I'm curious what your thoughts are on how this election is playing itself out right now.
Well, you know, politics, as you know, it can all change this afternoon. It could change tomorrow morning. It's a very fluid business, to put it mildly. I was in the state legislature in Maryland for 8 years, and the comment can change the whole dynamic of a race.
Mm-hmm.
It's been terrific down here. There's a lot of buzz in North Carolina. There's a lot of energy. You know, people, obviously the race is tightening up. It's going to be a close election. But it's an important election. You know, a historical election gets used often, that language, but I think it really is an important election for the future of the country.
Yeah, well said. Tell us, what's going on with Save the Children?
Well, I run all of our U.S. programs. You know, a lot of folks know Save the Children's work on the international front.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been in the United States, actually started as a U.S. program focused on feeding poor kids in Kentucky, and now we're in 200 schools around the country. I've been there for almost 10 years,
mm-hmm.
Working on early childhood education, 0 to 5-year-old kids, and then in school, after school, and summer literacy program with a health component as well. You know, there's almost 25% of the kids in this country are living in poverty, and that number is way too high.
Oh, yeah.
And what we found, you know, when you look back at my father's career in 1965, when the adult rate was about the same as the young kid rate of about 25% then, by 1975, those numbers have been dropped down by 10%, down to 15%.
Because of the Great Society.
Because of the investment of the Great Society and the war against poverty. A lot of people said, well, the war on poverty was a failure, but most of the programs are still around. The problem was that we didn't fund it enough.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't make the commitment to trying to eradicate poverty in this country, and we didn't invest in our most vulnerable citizens, who are our kids. And that's what Save the Children's doing, trying to get political leadership on the state and federal level to invest in high quality cost-efficient, effective programs like the ones we run in over 200 communities around the country.
Is Save the Children the charity that Sally Struthers used to...
Way back when. You got a good memory.
Used to go on TV for.
It was a long time ago.
Isn't it mind-boggling in a way? I mean, when you think about it in the largest sense, that this charity that, you know, we all fondly remember as the one that's helping the kids with the big bellies and flies in their eyes, you know, in third world foreign countries, that charity finds that its work is needed in the United States of America?
That's where it started. And, you know, today when 25% of the kids in this country are living in poverty, it's a clear indication that there's a lot more work that needs to be done. You know, a lot of folks think in America you can pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. But if you're really poor, you don't even have the bootstraps, and you're really little, you don't even have the bootstraps to pull yourself up with.
Yeah.
So what's really important, what SAVE really focuses on, look, is if kids succeed in school, they'll succeed in life. They can do whatever they want, whether they want to be a car mechanic or a lawyer or a doctor or work at an airline. It doesn't matter. But they need that education, and that's where our focus is in. It's really making sure that kids are entering kindergarten ready to learn and that they're doing well in first, second, and third grades.
How do you do that?
We go in, we partner with the schools. We're primarily focused in rural America, although we are in some urban centers like Omaha, Nebraska, and Washington, D.C., and Kansas City, Kansas. But we're in rural America. We go into the schools. We work with the principals. We give them money. And they hire staff. We work with the staff. We train the staff to teach kids how to read. And we supplement that work after school and in the summer times when so many opportunities, particularly for poor kids, aren't there. You have this huge brain drain that happens in the summertime. And for, you know, poor kids, they don't have the after-school activities that so many other families have, whether it's sports or music or arts. So Save the Children is doing that work, stressing education to make sure that kids are doing well academically.
We're talking with Mark Shriver, SaveTheChildren.org, the website, Senior Vice President of U.S. Programs for Save the Children. And where does your funding come from for these U.S. programs? Is some of it government funding?
We get a little bit of federal money, a very small amount of federal money. We get more state money, but then the bulk of our money comes from private donations, either corporate cause-related marketing from great sponsors like TJ Maxx, Toys R Us helps us out. Mm-hmm. Individuals, foundations help us out. But it's really a group, a broad array of different entities that are helping fund us. And small donors that can sponsor a child for about $35 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that raises a lot of money for us. So if folks are interested in helping out, learning more about poverty here in the U.S., they can go to SaveTheChildren.org, learn about our sponsorship programs here in the U.S. and our sponsorship work abroad, and really make a difference in kids' lives and in families' lives.
Right. Mark, it's a marvelous thing that you're carrying on your family's tradition of public service and service to those less fortunate. I really honor that. What do you see? We just have a minute left.
Yes.
Do you see any large programs or substantial, you know, like the war on poverty? Do you see the possibility of anything coming out of this next administration?
I think it's going to be tough. I mean, you know, President Obama put $500 million $500 million into early childhood education through Race to the Top funding, and that was a strong step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
I think we want to keep that going, to see it as an investment in our kids' future. I mean, Ben Bernanke, James Heckman, who won the Nobel Prize in Economics, said the best thing we can do for this country is to invest in early childhood education. And Bernanke, you know, supported that investment as well.
Yeah.
I don't see a large-scale investment like President Johnson did, but I think there's a lot that can be done, particularly on the local and state level. National is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on, though. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate your being here with us. Mark Shriver, SaveTheChildren.org is the website. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks a lot.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
More with Tom Hartman here live in D.C., but we'll be bringing in live guests from from Charlotte for the DNC. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, let me see. The reason I'm hearing nothing in my headphone is because my IFB is it's not plugged in. That always helps. There we go. Ha-ha! Magic! I can now hear things. Welcome back. Siri in Rainbow, Alabama. Hey, Siri, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am fine, thank you.
I'm feeling better.
Yes. Step by step.
Well, 2 points, Tom. What I'm a Democrat. I'm from the South, Alabama. President Clinton is going to speak for us, right? I lost everything from President Clinton when he signed NAFTA and broke the Glass-Steagall Act, handed that pen to Bill Graham, whose wife was on the board of Enron.
Right.
Now, he's a Rhodes Scholar. Didn't he realize what this deregulation was going to do to this country and these trade agreements?
I honestly don't know the answer to that question, and I'm guessing if he does know, given that he has kind of vaguely apologized for some of that, but not directly and not loudly, and so... I think this is one of the reasons why the Democratic Party, I think if the Democratic Party was to come out against free trade tomorrow morning, that they would never lose another election as long as they live. And,
I agree. And why don't they?
But I think that they don't, because they haven't, because the principle, the high point, the zenith of corporate free trade, corporate international free trade, corporate-run international free trade, was during the Clinton administration. And
they keep changing the name, like the North American Trade Agreement. It's the Tillman Act, and it's,
Well, no, the Tillman Act was in 1907. It banned corporations from giving money to politicians.
Mm-hmm.
But there are always these new treaties coming along now. Southern Pacific, Trans-Pacific Partnership, I guess, is the new one, the TPP.
Mm-hmm.
And,
him being a Rhodes Scholar and as smart as Clinton was, I really think he sold us down the tube. He's really good friends with President Bush. I mean, Senior President Bush.
Yeah. We will never know. I get you're upset and don't disagree that it was a mistake. But let's move forward here. Congressman Patrick Murphy is on the line with us, who represents... Yeah, Congressman Murphy.
Yes, it's great to be with you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. You represent where?
I represented Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I was only the second Democrat in the history of 200 years to be a Democrat to represent it. But I served two terms. I was a first Iraq War veteran, won in 06, 08. I got caught in that wave in 2010. But I am supporting President Obama, doing all I can for the team.
Well, that's great. So tell me, what's going on there?
Well, they're not making it any easier on us. We have a Republican governor, Republican House, and Republican state senate that just passed a pretty offensive voter ID bill, mm-hmm. which frankly is unconstitutional. I mean, here, if we have veterans who served in Iraq or Afghanistan, some of which unfortunately lost their legs, don't have a driver's license anymore, that they can't show up to vote with their military ID. We have other Americans who've gone to the same voting place year after year after year, and if they happen to forget their driver's license that day, they also can't vote. I mean, this is absolutely outrageous. But we can't just take it. We got to fight back and do all we can to make sure we win this November 6th.
Well, they want to make sure that, Democrats don't get a chance to vote. More than a quarter of African Americans and Latinos don't have the kind of ID required. I find it particularly ironic that in the state of Virginia, you can get a concealed weapons permit by mail, even if you live out of state, by filling out an online questionnaire. And in Texas, one of the acceptable IDs that they were going to have for if you want to vote was an out-of-state gun license. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, but when your ideas, when you don't want people to vote, that means your ideas suck.
Yeah.
And that's what Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are offering. I mean, they're trying to, sable rattle. They're trying to make sure that we go into new military engagements in places like Syria and Iran. I'm a guy who served in Iraq, who unfortunately lost 19 of my fellow paratroopers from the 82nd Airborne Division, who came back home and decided to do something about it, run for the U.S. Congress.
Yeah.
And I was proud that Barack Obama stood on his own two feet, brought those troops home from Iraq. He went after Bin Laden, brought him to justice, and now he's bringing troops home from Afghanistan. We got to get people back to work here in our country and not get in these unnecessary wars in places like Iraq and Syria and Iran.
Yeah, you're sounding like George Washington. I'm totally with you. Back in 1980, a fellow by the name of Paul Weyrich, started an organization called the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which has sponsored all these bills that make it harder to vote, these voter suppression laws. And in 1980, he was working on the Reagan campaign. He was Reagan's direct mail manager. He also worked on the Bush senior campaign and the Bush junior campaign. He died a couple of years ago. But he was a grand old man in the grand old party. But one of the senior strategists, one of the senior Republican strategists, and I just wanted to play 30 seconds of something that he had to say to a group of Republican Christian activists in a church in Dallas, Texas in 1980 when he was first putting all this stuff together. Here's Paul Weyrich.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, the Republicans have been pursuing that strategy for some time. I mean, that was about the time, actually it was about 15 years before that, that Bill Rehnquist was, you know, earning his chops down in Arizona, showing up at the voting stations near Indian reservations and in Hispanic regions, challenging voters. And it's what eventually led him to become Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So the Republican Party has been engaged in voter suppression for a long, long time. Where do you think this is going to go? How long do you think they're going to get away with this?
Well, I saw last week in Texas, thank God we have a judiciary that did the right thing down there. But
and one of them was a Bush appointee, one of the justices.
Right, right.
One of
but,
the judges.
You know, they have a higher standard down there under the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And we don't, in Pennsylvania, we don't have the same standards. It's a lesser standard. So, you know, I'm hopeful that the Pennsylvania judiciary will do the right thing, but we aren't.
So far, they haven't. So far, they've said your law is okay, and you got what 400,000 or 500,000 people now in Pennsylvania, mostly people of color or people who are poor, or you know, as you pointed out, you know, veterans who lost their legs, don't have a driver's license, people who are elderly, people who find it difficult to get out and get that ID,
right.
Who will not be able to vote in this upcoming election because of these Republican voter suppression efforts that started with Paul Weyrich back in 1980.
That's right. And, Tom, it's actually closer to it's either a floor, a minimum of 788,000 Pennsylvanians.
Wow.
Or 1.2 million.
Wow.
And now there's a study that shows that if the election, if that voter ID bill that was passed in Pennsylvania was passed 4 years earlier, that John McCain would have won Pennsylvania. So what does that tell you? This is going to be a closer race than it was 4 years ago. And now with this voter ID bill, which is really trying to disenfranchise Americans, it is outrageous. And let me tell you something else, Tom. We need Americans to stand up. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. You know, I served two deployments after 9/11. And we fight wars over the right to vote. And here we're chipping away in our own democracy at home.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one party is anyway.
Well, yeah.
It is. It is absolutely criminal. It is absolutely criminal. Former Congressman Patrick Murphy from Pennsylvania. And Congressman, I thank you for dropping by today. Any final thoughts on what you hope comes out of this convention?
You know, I have to be honest with you, Tom, real quick. You know, this is my second convention ever. But, you know, I was at Mass. I'm a devout Catholic. And I was at Mass at 10 o'clock with my two little kids and my, you know, my family. And, you know, the Catholic vote has voted for the presidency since 1972. So Catholics as a bloc, although they're not monolithic, but as
you mean
a bloc,
they voted Republican or Democratic?
No, they've predicted whoever they vote for as a bloc has won the presidency.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And, you know, I know the Republicans are trying to push from the far right wing, you know, the Catholic Church and others. But let me tell you something else. As a Catholic, I don't know how, as a social justice Catholic, how you could vote for Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
When they've clearly turned their back on the poorest among us. I mean, Jesus Christ was very clear in the gospel. How you treat the least of my brothers, you treat me.
Yeah, Matthew 25.
And, yep, and, you know, we need to do everything we can, get the word out there, to make sure that people know what's at stake. We need Barack Obama and Joe Biden to win November 6th. And we have to come together and do everything we can these final 60-some days.
And we need to take the House back, too. Are you running for the House this time?
I'm not running for the House, Tom. I'm on sabbatical. Mm-hmm. I'm running for office. You know, I have a young family,
yeah.
And, you know, it's pretty, I'm in the Philadelphia media market. It's pretty expensive.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm in the private sector. I'm doing everything I can for the home team. We have a great candidate in my district, Kathy Buchvar. I know Tammy Duckworth, who's running Illinois, Iraq War veterans, speaking tonight at the convention. It's an exciting time. So
yeah.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. I really appreciate it. If I could ever do anything for you or your listeners, you please let me know.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for the kind offer, and thanks for standing up and speaking out and being there and and yeah, everything. It's much appreciated.
Well, thanks, brother. God bless you.
Thank you, and you too. Former state representative or former U.S. Representative Patrick Murphy of Pennsylvania. 45 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman program. We will be back with more, both guests from the DNC and your calls here on the Tom Hartman program. 45 minutes past the hour as we... you can check out, by the way, our live chat room. You can build your own blog. You can participate in our message boards. It is all free. Everything is free on the entire website except for the podcast over at TomHartman.com. And we've got live video, and
you're
that's free
listening
too.
To the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So it's a hoot. Check it out, TomHartman.com. Have fun. We'll be right back. Talk media for the sane among us. It's the Tom Hartman program. Welcome back live from Washington, D.C. And Chris Murphy is live in Charlotte, North Carolina, U.S. Congressman from Connecticut, Democrat representing the 5th District, and a U.S. Senate candidate from Connecticut running against Linda McMahon. The website, chrismurphy.com, live from the DNC radio row. You can reach him via Twitter at chrismurphyct, as in Connecticut. And Chris, welcome to the program. Our congressman, welcome to the program.
Chris, it's fine. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. What is happening at the DNC that you're seeing that you think is important?
Listen, I think we've got to make an argument here that the historical revisionism that's happening about our economy, that we got here without public investment, is absolute nonsense. And so what I see is people coming together and saying, listen, this is a time that we have to stand up for the fact that this country will not succeed moving forward if we don't wake up and understand that without investment in roads and bridges and education and job training, we're cooked. And so, you know, I've only been here for a day. This is my first convention, so I'm kind of getting used to the pace of the place. But, you know, that's what I hear people talking about. And that's important for Connecticut. You know, Connecticut is a high-cost state that does not succeed unless we're making investments in Interstate 95 and University of Connecticut and a lot of our great pharmaceutical companies. So we need that, and I'm hearing that here today.
Yeah, that's great. The pushback, you know, the Republicans have constructed this weird America, this, we built it kind of, or you built it, I guess is what they were saying, kind of odd America. And John Kennedy really pushed back on that. I've got a little clip here. Let me just play it for you, if you'd like, of him talking about how this, how America really, the West was built, for example. You know, he talks about these guys.
A great pioneer heritage should remember that the West was settled with two great actions by the national government. One, in President Lincoln's administration, when he gave a homestead to everyone who went West, and in 1862, he set aside government property to build our land-grant colleges. This cooperation between an alert and progressive citizen and a progressive government is what has made this country great, and we shall continue as long as we have the opportunity to do so.
Do you expect to hear that kind of rhetoric coming out of this DNC this time?
Yeah, without the Boston accent, probably. But no, listen, I think that's a case that we have to make out there. I mean, I always think about my mother. My mother grew up poor in public housing in New Britain, Connecticut. And, you know, she made it because she worked hard and she played by the rules, but also because she had a good public education. And her dad had a job at a factory across the street that made things for the federal government. And she got college aid to be the first woman in her family to get a degree. I mean, you know, she wouldn't have made it without her community wrapping their hands around her. And the American dream doesn't exist without community investment. It's not the beginning and the end. The beginning and the end is your decision to both put the time in and then get the results. But the middle is all of us sort of wrapping our hands around it. And I just think that, you know, when it comes down to a decision between, you know, community and every person being out for themselves, this country still wants to be a community. This country still wants to invest in our commonality. And there's nobody better at making that case than Barack Obama. Nobody in my lifetime. And I hope he rises to the occasion on Thursday.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And we're talking with Chris Murphy, U.S. Congressman from Connecticut, running for the U.S. Senate from Connecticut. His website, chrismurphy.com, CHRISMURPHY, spelled as you'd expect. And Congressman Murphy, you said your dad was making things that were sold to the U.S. government. You know, as that's how he raised you. I mean, it's how he earned a living. In 1935, Franklin Roosevelt signed a piece of legislation called the Buy America Act, which said that the federal government, if it was buying anything from paperclips to tanks, had to buy them from an American manufacturer unless they got a waiver. They had to get a specific waiver. Congress mandated a very specific waiver process, and the waiver involved a process of proving that you could not find this product in the United States and you know, within a certain range of costs and all these kinds of things. Starting with the Reagan administration, that waiver process became routine. And from the Reagan administration up until this very day, that waiver process has become so routine that the vast majority of government purchases are no longer from U.S. companies, even though the Buy America Act is still on the books. Is there anything that we can do to stop the routine use of that waiver process and go back to the Buy America Act that Franklin Roosevelt passed in 35 that helped build this great industrial democracy?
Well, either that question is a great coincidence or you do fantastic prep. You're talking to the founder of the Buy America Caucus in Congress. Yeah, I spend the majority of my time on this exact issue because I believe that there are 600,000 jobs based on our research that could return to this country if we simply cleaned up some of the worst loopholes in the Buy America law. This is an absolute abomination that we have allowed that exception to essentially become the rule. And the examples are really mind-blowing. You know, here's the latest one. Our dog tags are made by a machine. They're made out in the field by a machine. That machine has always been American-made, right? The symbol of the sacrifice of our troops should be made on an American-made machine. One of the exceptions to the Buy America clause is that any country that signed a trade agreement from us counts as made in America. And so we now buy our dog tag machines from a European company that bid that put in a bid 4% lower, just 4% lower than the U.S. company.
That's insane.
Killing U.S. jobs. And so, you know, we have got to get smarter about this and recognize that, you know, when you buy something for a couple percentage points cheaper overseas, that differential gets eaten up immediately when the U.S. worker goes on the unemployment rolls, is on Medicaid, when you lose the taxes.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is my mission, representing a heavily reliant defense state. I'm working this issue as hard as I can.
That is absolutely great. I mean, that's like the Olympic uniforms being made in China, both recently and when Mitt Romney was running the Olympics, and the border guards down on the Texas border. You know, their uniforms are made in Mexico.
but this happens for a reason. It's because the big defense contractors get to keep a bigger portion of the price if they can find more content overseas. So
yeah.
It's not an accident. This has happened because the wrong people are running our defense policy.
Chris Murphy, head of the Buy America Conference?
Caucus.
I did not even know that. Chris, Congressman Murphy, congratulations. ChrisMurphy.com.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. Glad to have you with us live from Washington, D.C. Rashad Robinson, the executive director of Color of Change, colorofchange.org, Twitter at Rashad Robinson, at Color of Change, on the line with us. Rashad, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Back in 1980, a fellow by the name of Paul Weyrich, who was one of the godfathers of the Republican movement, he was one of the co-founders of the Heritage Foundation, of the Cato Institute, which was back then called David Koch Foundation. He was one of the co-founders of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which has produced all these laws to suppress voter registration and voter, and voting across the country. In a rare moment of candor, or perhaps he didn't realize he was being videotaped, or actually 16-millimeter taped, in a rare moment of candor, said to a group of Republicans who had gathered in a church in Texas to he was working on the Reagan campaign at that time. He was in charge of the direct mail campaign. He ran on the he worked on the Bush both Bush campaigns later. Paul Weyrich in 1980 said this to a group of Republican activists.
Now many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Shad, your thoughts?
Well, I think that this is the story of our country. It's been an ongoing fight in our democracy. As we've worked, and so many pro-democracy folks, civil rights community, women's suffrage movement has fought to expand the suffrage, has fought to make our voting more inclusive, there have been forces that have fought on the other side, have pushed back, have tried to close our system off and made it an invitation-only system where only a few voices can be heard. This is exactly the reason why organizations like Color of Change exist. To empower the voices of everyday people, to create a counterbalance and a counterweight to forces like the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, and others.
So it seems that Paul Weyrich's dream, I mean, he's been dead for a couple of years, but it seems that his vision of a time when in America only those who were Republican-leaning voters would actually be able to vote has come to fruition. At least in a number of states, Pennsylvania probably at the top of that list, over a million people may not be able to vote in this election, almost all of them people who would be in typically in the Democratic-leaning category. What is Color of Change doing about this?
Well, Color of Change is doing a number of things. Right now, we're currently working and with our members in the state of Pennsylvania to get to have them work to not only help people get their voter IDs because of the new voter ID law, but also to work to capture the stories of hardships of people getting their IDs. We're hearing really terrible stories of senior citizens waiting full days, some of them with medical bags on their bodies, trying to get access IDs, people being turned away multiple times because, you know, women who got married and their name no longer is the same name as the one on their driver's license. And so the Pennsylvania State DMV can't give them a driver's license. We're hearing all these stories, but we're capturing them because there is still time to file multiple lawsuits. Because part of what happened in Pennsylvania is that the court said that it was easy to get a voter ID, that it wasn't going to be tough. What we're actually experiencing on the ground, though, as our members and their friends, family, and neighbors go to the poll, go to the DMV and other locations to get their IDs, is that it is a challenge. And this is exactly the reason why not only so many folks in Pennsylvania will be disenfranchised, but across the country where voter ID laws exist, we will see many people that will have a real problem accessing the polls.
Yeah, these voter suppression ID laws are they're becoming ubiquitous. It's like, you know, there's not a state that doesn't have a Republican-controlled legislature, it seems, that hasn't proposed them at the very least. And it is the new Republican thing to do. And Fox News, of course, has all their viewers hysterical about all those, mostly presumably illegal Hispanics who all want to vote to change the election. And, you know, which is an absurd notion. Do you think that there will be time to stop this in Pennsylvania?
Well, you know, we're not sure. So we're moving with a two-prong strategy.
Right.
One prong is to do what we can to make sure this court case moves forward, to get the right amount of plaintiffs in Wisconsin, where we were successful in the courts. The legal groups were successful. There were over 35 plaintiffs. And so we know that we need to get a number of plaintiffs with a diverse array of stories. At the same time, we need to work to help people get their voter IDs. And we need to utilize the turnout vehicles that we put in place, the communication vehicles that we put in place to not only turn people out on election day, but also help people get the right IDs that they're going to need to be able to vote.
Okay. I got it. Let me bring in a caller. This is Madison Eagle in Mayetta, Kansas, watching us on Dish Network on Free Speech TV. Madison Eagle, you wanted to speak about GOP poll watchers. Do you have a comment that you can share that perhaps Rashad can riff off?
Oh, absolutely. The regular news talk about poll watchers all the time, I had a question. They go to school. They learn the dark arts of intimidation. They have their techniques. But what are those techniques? What are we going to be facing? My people, I want to protect them. I have a solution to that. I hope it'll work.
Are you Native American, Madison Eagle?
Well. Yes.
And what do you think your solution is?
Okay. Well, our tribal council is over the police department here. We hire them and fire them, and and all we need to do is to have a general council quorum to order the tribal council to take one of our federal officers. You know, they're all federal here on the reservation, and they do have jurisdiction within the entire county, which may be unusual. I'm not sure, but they do have that agreement with them. It took a long time to get that, actually, and to have a federal officer present at the voting area to watch over our people to see that no laws are broken by these poll watchers.
These Republican poll watchers and this intimidation machine. Madison Eagle, thank you for the call. Rashad Robinson, your thoughts on voter intimidation in general across the United States. I mean, it was William Rehnquist who made his chops in the Republican Party, ended up Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court back in the 60s in Arizona by challenging Native American voters at the polls in the Phoenix area.
Yeah, I mean, and what we're seeing this year is really unprecedented since the Jim Crow era. And its coordination may be unprecedented ever. You know, what we're seeing is True the Vote has pledged over a million poll watchers. They've been doing trainings around the country and training folks in all sorts of tactics of intimidation, from asking people for citizenship to challenging, you know, folks who they believe might not, shouldn't be voting, which, you know, is going to utilize racial profiling like tactics. Mm-hmm. True the Vote has pledged these things, and it's incredibly coordinated. The Secretary of State in Ohio, who's come under a lot of fire for closing down early voting, which the courts just overturned. We're still waiting on the ruling on weekend voting, but the court overturned his attempt to prevent early voting in Ohio. He was scheduled the next weekend to go and speak at a True the Vote conference and tell the outrage happened from organizations like Color of Change and others. He was going to be on the a keynote speaker at the True the Vote Ohio conference, along with the former Secretary of State of Ohio. Many of your viewers and listeners might know of the name Ken Blackwell,
yes,
whose name became really famous during the 2004 election. So these are not just sort of citizen folks who are out there and not connected. These people are now connected to our Secretary of State, the people who should be guarding and protecting our elections.
That's amazing. Rashad Robinson, you can read all about it over at colorofchange.org. Executive Director of Color Change. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Keep up the great work, please. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Voter intimidation, voter ID laws, I mean, all of this stuff. The Republicans, they're throwing everything they got at this. They're suppress the vote.
Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why you had to hide away for so long.
Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Exposing the con in conservative. What can I say? 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And Craig in Sierra Vista, Arizona. Hey, Craig, what's on your mind?
Yeah, Tom, how do you convince your fellow worker to start a union?
Well, typically you have a grievance. I mean, usually what provokes unionization is people in the workplace saying I'm being screwed, and obviously nobody's standing up for me. If you've got, I mean, there are some employers in the United States that actually pay decent wages and benefits or are fairly small organizations where people don't feel the need to unionize. In fact, you know, it might be more hassle than it's worth. On the other hand, you get some of these very large organizations where you're a cog in the machine, or where, you know, management treats you like crap or whatever. And I would say if you're going to unionize, start with an organization where you've got people who feel like they have a grievance.
Well, like, for example, Tom, like, I work for an ambulance company, mm-hmm. and we're involved with patients all the time getting sick or whatnot. And, you know, to convince these people that to be able to afford health insurance was impossible. I mean, it'd be half my paycheck.
Right.
And so, you know, that to me, that's the biggest for for the workers. You know, a few would go with it, but
yeah,
it would go stagnant, and that.
So, are you trying to unionize your ambulance company workers?
I was trying to until I got fired.
See, that's the other problem is, you know, some companies, somebody comes along and says, we're going to try and unionize. And when Ronald Reagan, you know, up until Reagan, the head of the Department of Labor, the Department of Labor is there to represent labor in the United States. And the head of the Department of Labor had always been, even in Republican administrations, even during the Nixon administration, Ford administration, the Eisenhower administration, the head of the Department of Labor had been somebody who was, you know, from organized labor and in favor of labor. And Reagan changed that, and he put in charge of the Department of Labor somebody who was openly hostile to the interests of labor. And that's been the standard in every Republican administration ever since. And so it's what they've done is they've drilled so many holes in the National Labor Relations Act of 1935 that it is now possible, it's quite easy actually, for employers to prevent unionization. And it's a terrible, terrible
thing. How do we convince the workers before a disagreement or a grievance happens? I mean, you know, the small things, you know, because it's going to lead up to worse conditions.
Craig, the way you do it is you start out by talking to a union. You go to a union before you've talked to any of your fellow employees and say, I would like, you know, to consider unionizing this organization. Which union is the right union to represent us? Find that union, talk to their organizers, and they will tell you the steps to go through and how to do it in ways that will minimize the probability you're getting fired and maximize your success. But you need to start by talking to a representative of a union. Craig, thank you very much for the call. I'm sorry to hear your experience, and I wish you the very best in the future. Karen in Coon Rapids, Minnesota, listening to KTNF. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Hi. I want to tell you how much I appreciate all your knowledge and the information that you give us listeners. I've been
a fan
for a long time, and I love you.
Thank you.
Anyway, regarding the call from the gal who was wondering if Paul Ryan had received Pell Grants,
mm-hmm.
I remember seeing him on a televised stump speech, and he was telling that after his dad died that he got Social Security,
right.
And then he, I'm not sure if somebody asked him, but I do remember him saying that his education was also with the help of Social Security.
Yeah, it may well have been. But I understand also his family, and I don't know which side, made a lot of money building highways back before Paul Ryan was born, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, that was the source of a lot of their wealth, to the extent that they're wealthy. But I can't represent myself as a Paul Ryan biographer, but, your understanding, your recollection comports with mine. Thank you very much, Karen, for the call and for your kind words. I appreciate
it.
Thank you. Let's see here. Dave in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. This is Dave from Phoenix. I don't see what's the problem of having voter ID. I mean, you got to have ID for everything.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. It's a cost. Dave, let me finish my sentence here. It's a cost benefit equation. It's a really simple thing. You know, if people don't have driver's licenses demonstrating that they actually know how to drive, then there's going to be a higher probability that there's going to be people on the road who don't know how to drive and who are going to kill you, right? So, you know, the hassle and things of driver's licenses makes a lot of sense. And so with everything that we do, everything at law that is done, there is a cost-benefit equation, and typically everything in business. You know, how much, you know, if we're going to say we're going to take the amount of mercury that a power plant can emit down to, you know, one part per billion, okay, they can afford to do that for, you know, $100 per billion parts or whatever, but at one-tenth of one part, it suddenly becomes $5,000 per billion per parts, you know, and so is it worth it doing it for that just to save a few people from dying from mercury poisoning? At some point, it becomes not reasonable, right? Okay, so you got cost-benefit equations. Now, we know in the United States that around 20 or 30 people a year vote illegally. And the Bush administration spent $74 million trying to find that out. So the question is it worth the cost of millions and millions of dollars, which is what it's costing the states, I mean, some individual states, it's going to cost more than $1 million to have their poll workers be checking ID and all these new IDs issued and all this other stuff. Is it worth millions and millions of dollars? Plus, is it worth having over 1 million voters just in the state of Pennsylvania? Principally older people, people who are disabled, people who are college-age students, people who live in the inner city and don't own a car, poor people who don't own a car, those people who are typically Democratic-leaning voters. Is it worth having 1 million people knocked off the voting rolls to prevent 5 people from illegally voting in the state of Pennsylvania? I ask you the question, is it?
Yeah, I believe that everyone should have an ID. I mean, in Phoenix...
Okay, so you don't understand my concept, and you're shilling for the Republican Party, one or the other, you know, or you're one of those people who thinks everybody should have an ID and we should live like in Nazi Germany, where the police can say papers, please.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I find this so amazing. You know, 2 years ago when there was talk about a national ID card, it was all the Republicans and conservatives who are, you know what, national ID, papers, please? No, we can't have that. Now, he's got to have an ID. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very metagnostically ugly. The good, Michael Hayden. Hayden, the former Bush administration NASA head and CIA director, told the Israeli newspaper Haaretz that any attack by Israel or the U.S. on Iran would only delay that country's nuclear weapons program and, in fact, would push the country to develop a nuclear bomb sooner. He said of the paper that an attack, quote, will only set the Iranians back some time and will actually push them to do that which is supposed to prevent getting nuclear weapons, end quote. Currently, the Obama administration is trying to use a diplomatic solution to resolve tension with Iran. The Republican war hawks in Congress have repeatedly said that an attack on that country is America's only option. Maybe Mr. Hayden's words will change their mind, although I'm not holding my breath. The bad. Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn. Horn is on a mission to stop the use of medical marijuana in Arizona. On Thursday, Horn filed a suit with the federal court arguing that possession, distribution, and cultivation of marijuana are all forbidden by federal law, and state authorization of these activities is preempted by federal law. End of quote. However, according to the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, powers not granted to the federal government and that are not prohibited by the Constitution are left up to the states or the people. Arizona voters voted in favor of medical marijuana, but it looks like Horn doesn't care about that. It's clear that he's the latest crusader in this nation's failed war on drugs. What we need are sensible drug laws, not more people thrown into prison just so private prison corporations can turn a profit. And the very, very ugly Mark Harris. Harris was a Pennsylvania delegate at last week's Republican National Convention. Before the convention, he went on vacation with his wife to Disneyland, where he noticed that an employee working at the America exhibit at the Epcot theme park was of Mexican descent. And he was so astonished that there was a Mexican employee at Disney World that he took to his blog to rant about it. In a blog post, Harris wrote that he and his wife were both highly offended that a person from Mexico was working at the America exhibit. This latest anti-immigration rant from a conservative comes just days after two RNC attendees were thrown out for throwing peanuts at an African-American CNN employee. Republicans claimed last week that they want to bring back American exceptionalism, but apparently that exceptionalism is only for white Americans, and that is very, very ugly.
Boy, that is mind-bogglingly ugly.
The Democratic platform, by the way, says that future budget, you know, resolving budget issues and paying for things should all be done by tax increases. In other words, enough with the cuts already. You know, the federal government is small enough as it is, where our federal government, as a percentage of GDP, is less than half the size of Canada's or any European country. And they all seem to be working quite well. You know, what's with this thing of, oh, we need a little government that's just a tiny little thing, you know, it's nothing to talk about. Robert in Baltimore. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I'm glad to see you're back and looking a little better, and I hope you get some rest. I heard you one time you told us that you hadn't gotten any sleep for like six something like you only got like 6 hours of sleep in about two or three days.
Yeah, I had a couple of rough days, but over the weekend, this long weekend, Louise and I spent a lot of time goofing off and watching reruns of Columbo. And
okay.
What's up?
Well, I've been very concerned about this stuff in Pennsylvania. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the electoralvote.com map, and it shows the Dems are ahead by 9 points. But what good is that if they can't vote?
Right. Yeah. This voter suppression ID laws is a big deal, and it's a big deal that the Republicans are depending upon to win. Because they realize that, you know, they're not being exclusively the party of white people when white people made up 5 or 6% of the electorate two elections ago, 73%, I believe, last election. And it's probably going to be more like 70 or 71% this election the demographics are going against the Republicans, and they're either going to have to change or die or figure out a way to prevent people who aren't white from voting. Which is, of course, what they're doing. So I don't have an instant answer. There is a lot of people out there working on the issue, though. And we'll see, you know, colorofchange.org is one of the very best ones. So if you want to pitch in and help out, you can go over to colorofchange.org and let them know what you're up to.
I've been to their website, and they have nothing on Pennsylvania at all.
Well, that's interesting. I would send them an email and, you know, ask them what's going on, ask them how you can help.
Yeah, I would think unions and sympathetic churches would be helpful. I know, yeah. In Ohio, you there's the Souls to the Polls type of mm-hmm. program.
Yeah. There are a lot of good voter registration programs all around the country. The unions are very active. A lot of churches are very active. And, you know, but it's hard to go up against billionaire money. I mean, this True the Vote thing, this has got, which is, you know, the right wing effort to suppress voters who are not white. They have hundreds of millions or millions of dollars, let's say, behind them, and this is chump change for these billionaires who want to make sure that the Republicans win. Robert, thanks for the call. John in Winnemucca, Nevada. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was listening to the immigration rights activists who were at the Dem convention this morning on Democracy Now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it gave me this novel idea, but I think it does kind of speak to what the Mexican government could do to sort of reciprocate the offensiveness of their policy, which is what if the Mexican government obtained the records of U.S. registered Republicans, cross-reference those names to U.S. expats living in Mexico, deported them, seized their property, and transferred that property to Mexican workers that had been deported as a result of Republican immigration policy here.
Yeah, turnabout is fair play.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever going to happen, John, but it's an interesting fantasy.
Yeah, but it does speak to, you know, just reciprocal national policy.
Yeah, yeah, I'm absolutely with you. Thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to Talk 1090.
Hi, Tom. Good to have you back.
Sure.
In terms of the voter ID, these constitutionalist Republicans seem to forget that there was no photo ID in 1789.
Yeah, you're right. There were no photos.
because people realized, and we now know, that your signature is tantamount to your fingerprint.
Yeah.
There's no way to fake it. And so what they're really suggesting is that every election since the beginning of the country was potentially yielded fraudulent results, yet historians cannot point to a single election where that is true except for two, and that would be the 1876 election and, of course, the election in 2000. Both of those were election fraud,
yeah.
Not voter fraud.
Right, and I would say the election of 2004, too, if you look at what happened in Ohio.
Yeah, well, everything Bush is laced with fraud, but
yeah.
You know, there's no reason to believe there's not been a single, I mean, not just in recent times. So what they're conjuring up, something that doesn't exist and never has existed.
Right.
As far as we know.
Yeah.
And if you look at the, unbelievable conspiracy that it would take in order to have a successful voter fraud effort, the number of people that would have to be involved to make any kind of a difference at all, it's nonsensical.
No, the only real voter fraud or election fraud, let's say, effort that is going on right now is this effort to suppress the vote. That's a genuine effort to change the outcome of the election by controlling who can and can't vote. And it's an echo of times past when they had literacy tests, and the literacy tests were things like, please explain, geometry. Or, I mean, you know, they would ask like these, you know, to prove the illiteracy of poor African Americans. It wasn't, can you read and write? You know, these were tests that white people couldn't pass either.
When you look at, even as more and more segments of the population gained voting rights, African Americans and women, still no fraud has ever been able to be shown
through
the elections throughout time. So
no voter fraud. Idea. There's been plenty of election fraud, but no voter fraud. Excellent point. And this is my, you know, more people die every year of TVs falling on their heads than commit voter fraud. You know, I mean, the famous voter fraud cases that we know of are Mitt Romney saying that he lived in his son's basement in Massachusetts when he didn't. And Ann Coulter saying that she lived at her agent's house when she didn't. You know, I can at least understand Ann Coulter's, you know, being a public figure. She didn't want to have her address published. But Mitt Romney's, you know, I'm surprised nobody's called him out on that. So.
Well, I'm good with her, both of them living in a basement. That's fine with me.
There you go. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. Catherine in Irvine, New York. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Not much, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. We have just a minute, though, so
okay, here's my question to you. I want to know what party, what administration actually passed the legislation that allowed all these jobs to start going overseas?
Well, it really started with the Nixon administration and Nixon's trip to China and his efforts to open America and to open communist countries. His efforts were somewhat unsuccessful, but he did crack the door. And then that mantle was picked up by Ronald Reagan, who started signing routinely exemptions to the Buy America Act so that the federal government could be buying things from foreign countries. And then, of course, it went on steroids during the Clinton administration when Bill Clinton signed NAFTA and CAFTA and SHAFTA and all that stuff. So it's an equal opportunity screw job of Americans, if you'll pardon the language, Catherine. It's an equal opportunity damage to America. Both parties have a bare responsibility for it. And this is why I think that the Democratic Party should make an apology and own up and say, we're not going to do that anymore.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And if the Democratic Party were to say, we're no longer the party of free trade agreements, we are the party of protectionism, and we want to protect American jobs here at home, they would start winning every election.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Indeed it is. And Bob in Homeworth, Ohio. Hey, Bob, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, this is to give you food for thought, all right? Give you some fuel. All right. You talk about about the identity, driver's license.
Right, voter suppression.
Okay. Now, Ohio, I think they've repealed it. But the whole point of it is here's a fact. I want to get my driver's license.
Where?
All right?
What state?
August 24th, Ohio.
Okay.
Okay. Want to get my driver's license, and it was blocked from New Jersey. New Jersey blocked it because they got something from Connecticut they blocked with. All right, the whole point of this is it a simple thing like that? I've never been to Connecticut. I have never been to New Jersey. All right?
Right.
I'm 76 years old, and I'm a registered Democrat.
Oh,
right?
Well, that's why you got blocked.
That's the thing.
Somebody bought a list.
Yeah, these guys they come on the air and they say, well, you got to have identity to do this. The whole thing is the fact that you do have to have the identity, they can do something like this. Now, they give me a number to call, all right? That was on August 24th. They give me a number to call. I called that number in New Jersey. New Jersey give us a number to call in Connecticut. Connecticut, what we got a hold of was a recording. The recording stated We'll be back to you within 5 to 7 work days. Now, this is the 7th work day, and they haven't got back to me yet. Now, what if I'd gotten that license renewed in October?
Yeah.
And they did this to me.
Right.
You wouldn't. It was a simple thing to do.
You'd have no ID to vote with.
Right. I'd have no ID to vote with. I mean, it's simple.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, okay, after it's over,
and you're talking
a driver's license.
Now, let me get this straight. You're talking about renewing an Ohio driver's license? You already have an Ohio driver's license?
Yes. I already have a
and all you want to do is renew it?
And all I want to do is renew it, and they blocked it.
But you're 74 years old, so you know, you fall into the demographic that is probable Democratic voters, because you're probably on Social Security and Medicare, and you and may well be a veteran of that age of World War II.
I am a veteran.
And that so somebody in Connecticut, some group in Connecticut.
Well, somebody in New Jersey picked it up.
Was it the state of New Jersey?
Yeah, New Jersey picked it up. And blocked it.
That's Chris Christie territory.
Right.
So why is Chris...
That's Christie's territory.
Why is Chris Christie telling Ohio to tell you not to be able to vote? Well,
that's the thing. Why didn't Connecticut didn't block it?
What office in Connecticut was it that you called?
Huh?
What office was it in Connecticut you called? It was the Secretary of State's office?
I don't know. It was just the number they gave us. And it wasn't even an office. It was recording.
That's bizarre.
Haven't got back to me.
That is absolutely bizarre. And in the number that you called New Jersey, was it a company or was it a state office or what? Who was it?
It was a state office in New Jersey. I got a hold of somebody, but they gave me a number to call in Connecticut. In Connecticut, I'm on a recording waiting to get the reply.
Amazing. Amazing.
And the thing about it is, I don't know. I'm going to go to Sharon Brown.
Yeah, I would call Sherrod Brown's office
right
away and tell him the story. And I would also go to moveon.org and let him know your story as well.
Because this shows these guys exactly what they can do to keep you from getting the vote.
Right.
Getting out there just by a simple little boom.
Yeah, if you want to get an investigative reporter on this thing, you might want to go over to thinkprogress.org. And, you know, look at some of their blogs, look at some, which of their reporters are doing election stuff, and send an email to that person with your story, too. Just a very short one with your contact information.
This shows an example of what they can do.
Yeah, that's
what they can do.
That is really remarkable, Rob, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks for calling and sharing your story with us.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
I just had to give you some fuel.
Yeah.
I'm tired of these guys calling up and they say, well, you got to have identity. But the whole point of it is, it isn't for the identity. It's to have a way of preventing you from getting it.
Yeah. Bob, do you mind if I put you on hold and ask Paul to get your contact information, and I'll put you in touch. I'll put a good reporter in touch with you.
Yeah, okay.
I will take care of this for you, Bob.
Okay,
let me put you on hold, and Paul's going to pick you up in just a second, and he'll get your information. This sounds really interesting. It might lead someplace. Gary in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. It's an honor to speak with you. I wanted to bring up a point that the Republicans talk about saving money and they're concerned about all this deficit, but yet they put a big charade, a political charade on a couple months ago.
Right.
They talked about the ceiling.
Right.
You know, they're
the
going to stop
ceiling.
The ceiling and all
yeah.
this. And, you know, we know, and I think you've talked about it yourself, that the Republicans, under other Republican presidents, have used the ceiling. You have to use it.
Yeah, they ran up most of the debt.
What I wanted to ask you is this. By doing that, the people that regulate the interest dropped us to AA. We were AAA.
Yeah.
I want to know
S&P.
What this political charade cost the American taxpayer. We have, $10 trillion deficit? Even if you drop 1%,
yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it was the number has been quantified, and I've got a couple of different numbers rolling around in my head, and I'm not going to name one of them because I may well be wrong. But the Center for American Progress's thinkprogress.org blog actually had that a couple of weeks ago. We reported it on the air. I'm sorry, I just don't remember it off the top of my head. But it was millions to billions, And it was all caused by the Republicans threatening to bring down the government over the debt ceiling. You're absolutely right. Gary, thank you for the call. And we should be remembering this, and we should be quantifying it. And I should be able to remember that number one of these days. Well, you know, there's a lot of numbers. Anyhow, coming up tomorrow, more from the DNC. Actually, it's just getting started, you know, so tomorrow it's going to be a whole lot more interesting. All the news from the convention, plus Senator Sherrod Brown, Sheldon Whitehouse, many more distinguished guests. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.